So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hi, I'm Miss H.
And I'm obviously Mr. O.
Yep, and we're here to talk about Love is Blind, episode 4 or 5? 5, episode 5.
5, episode 5.
Oh, goodness.
All right, so I let's just jump right into them.
Sure.
This is the first time we see everybody sticks around. We don't have anybody leaving this time, so we'll see how this goes. I'm going to start with Cameron and Lauren. So it looks like every couple for this episode has one big Cancun outing, and Cameron and Lauren's is a helicopter ride in a helicopter that's painted like a tiger, which looks awesome, but is probably not the most romantic of the events that people do due to the giant goofy headphones you have to wear and the cramped seating. But helicopter rides are pretty cool, so it looks like they had fun. Later on, they get some time at the pool and have another foreshadowing discussion about the perils of being in an interracial relationship. We learn that while this is a first for Lauren, it's actually not the first interracial relationship for Cameron. And he talks about some of the incidents he had from a previous relationship and what happened and how he dealt with them. All in all, it kind of feels like Lauren is like hyping herself up to deal with all the haters and the racists when they get back to their apartments, which they're going to get to, we understand, next episode. And that's pretty much all they had. So I understand why there's still like the kind of everybody's favorite go-to couple, because it's hard to come up with a question because they're just all so
well,
in sync.
I have a question for you then, because what I thought was kind of funny is Lauren kind of, you know, she's bubbly. She's joking around. She's like, oh, I think we're like the best couple. But there have been other couples on this episode specifically who have said the exact same thing. So why do you think that you would think that you were in the best couple?
So I think some of them had a little bit of a shades of difference, okay? Because some of the people were like, yes, we're the best couple. Other people were kind of like, I think I have the best person for me.
Sure.
Which is not the same thing.
Right?
Because some people looked at it like, oh, wow. And I feel like a lot of people looked at Cameron and Lauren that way. They looked at them and were like, oh, wow, they are great together. I don't think me and them would necessarily mesh as well as they do, but for each other, that's great, right? And I don't know. I mean, you start with, it's a pretty low bar. You don't fight. I mean, should you really be fighting by your third day?
Oh, well, when we get to Giannina and Damien. So yeah, I guess we can say that Giannina and Damien are not the best couple.
Right. But and that's another thing too, is people kind of go, we don't fight, right? And that's something that seems to come up with, oh, we really work great together because we don't fight. And, you know, from personal experience, you can not fight. I never fought with my ex-wife, but she's my ex-wife. And so that doesn't necessarily mean it was a great relationship. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's all on how you deal with conflict when it comes up. And even there's a whole lot more to it than just not fighting or just being excited to see each other. I mean, they're all literally on this kind of honeymoon. So they should, not everybody is, should be in sort of a honeymoon phase where you think everything's all sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah. I think it's nice that they both say that they are really into each other. And I think that's kind of what makes them good couple is that they're both on the same page. You know, it's like when one of the two likes the other one more, it always seems really imbalanced. And you're like, are you really like connecting and vibing as a couple? But I think why I think Cameron and Lauren specifically are the best couple isn't just their chemistry together, but it's who they are individually. I like both of them as people individually. And I would say that, you know, with someone like Kenny and Kelly, I like them, but if anything, it's like slightly over neutral. There's nothing that they've ever done that have been like completely negative, but I don't find them particularly super magnetic. And I don't even say likable. They're just not magnetic people to me. And Cameron and Lauren are definitely more magnetic.
Right. And I think that's, I would credit more of that to Lauren. She's a very charismatic person.
Yes, that's true. Cameron is definitely more calm and laid back. He's just kind of there. He lets her kind of run the show. Yeah, she's definitely very likable. Okay, one thing that I will have to say, which is funny because, you know, this is a different production company than Matt Sharp doing our 90 Day Fiancé and Love After Lockup. But it's like, what is it with production, like, trolling us again? What was with the crotch shots? like, of Cameron by the pool. It's like, what are we on, boner patrol? What is this?
Yes.
They just kept on showing, like, they were talking, but then they were focused on, it looked like he had something in his hand, like a glass or something like that. But it's like, why are we focusing on that? Because now all I'm seeing is up close and personal with Cameron's crotch as they're, like, starting to, like, get kind of close, but there's still a gap where you can kind of see. And I was just like, production, why?
That's true.
Why?
Because it wasn't, it's not just the guy, it's not just Cameron, because they do the same thing for, like, every woman on the show got a just a shot of just her bikini bottoms, like, took up like the entire screen.
It's like, why? Oh my goodness.
Everybody gets in the pool, they just cut it from, like, belly buttons down.
Yeah.
It's like them walking at the pool. I guess so. I don't know. They do a lot of montages in this episode.
There definitely was. Yeah, but it kind of
makes
you...
Which is something I'm not used to.
Yeah, it makes me wonder a little bit. Is that planned? Is that like those subliminal messages kind of... And I don't really know what the subliminal message would be exactly.
So I think it is. I don't know what they're going for in this one. But later in the episode, I do have something, a shot that I was like, oh, that's a subliminal message. So we'll get to that.
Okay. All right. So let's open with Kenny and Kelly. So we open on Kenny and Kelly having a nice dinner, I guess, for them, because they're feeding each other. So Kenny starts off this serious conversation asking if Kelly is anxious or concerned about living together. She can't think of anything that she would be concerned about, so Kenny follows up by saying that they may not see each other as much as they are now because they both have very busy work lives. Kelly thinks that they have to be intentional about having rules like no phone or internet during certain times and making time for one another. She says phone like three times, implying that this is a struggle for her. Kenny is a little nervous about things changing when they're back in Atlanta, and he wishes he could stay here in Mexico with Kelly forever. All right, so I guess my question is, I mean, they didn't really have that much going on, but I think this phone thing is like a valid concern. Do you think that there should be kind of established rules? Like, let's say you're dating someone new and things are getting serious. Do you think you have to intentionally make phone rules, or is this something that you should just, you know, I don't know. It's not so obvious is what I'm saying.
I'm more of an organic type person when it comes to that. Like, I don't like rules in relationships because rules in relationships reminds me of rules for drinking. And it's like, if you have to make rules for the drinking, it's already a problem. And so, like, I feel like if you have to make rules about certain things in the relationship, it's already a problem. If you should be, it should be enough to just say, hey, I think you're spending a little bit too much time on your phone, and let them be cognizant and mindful and think about you and try to do something for you. That's a working relationship. If you have to say no phones after 7:30, we're in a little bit of a different zone.
Yeah, I can say as someone who has dated someone that has been on their phone like all the time, I almost felt like a conversation did need to happen or some kind of rules established, because it's one of those things where it especially, okay, so the person that I dated, he worked in social media, so digital media marketing. He was constantly on his phone, and it was either work related or other, but you know, it's kind of like an addiction. It's like, okay, it's like, for example, I'm sure you have students like this. I am very strict about my cell phone policy in class. If I see at all a cell phone out, I will take it. So I have students that are like using their phone, and then they're shocked when I come up and like take it, and they're like, but I didn't even know I was using it. You would be shocked at how many times I've heard that as an excuse. And you're just like, that's not an excuse. What do you mean you didn't know you were using it? But I think like people are so used to just picking up their phone when they're even the littlest bored and just like using it as a distraction that they don't even realize that that's what they're doing.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it's definitely can definitely be an issue in a relationship. And it is exactly like you said. It is. I didn't even, I'm looking at my phone. Like, I've done this. How many times have you been looking for your phone while holding your phone? I've done it a few times.
Yeah, I can say that I haven't done that.
I've definitely been walking around the house, like looking at like something on my phone and be like, where did I put my phone? And then look at my phone. And it takes me a minute to be like, you're staring at your phone, dumbass. But I mean, nowadays, it wasn't even that long ago that it was that different.
Yeah.
But like, man, do you even go to the bathroom without your phone? Who goes to the bathroom without their phone?
Yeah. And I feel like it's more socially acceptable to talk about this now, you know? It's not like Seinfeld days where it's like even shunned upon to bring a book into the bathroom.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it is, I'm not saying it isn't an issue, but like that's also one of the ways you can kind of tell how into you somebody is when they actually put their phone
away.
And
so that's what concerns me a little bit is like, is that true? Because I guess my ex was like really not into me then. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know if he could have really stopped.
No. And there is, I'm saying there is lines and yeah. it's different for everybody. But, you know, just like some people, you know, can't stop eating. You, like, they have, can't have snacks in the house because they know they'll eat the whole bag of chips every day. Some people like that. Some people cannot put that phone away, especially if it's buzzing at them.
Yeah. And so she said phone, like, I was like, why is she saying it so many times? So I feel like one of two things. Either she personally has an issue with it and has been told about it from an ex, or she's had a problem with an ex that did that. And so now that's like something that triggers her. So, yeah. All right. I mean, that's all I really had for them.
All right. So Damien and Giannina.
Okay.
So we see Damien and Giannina just relaxing and sunning themselves on the second nicest boat we see in this episode. Damien makes what seems like a pretty offhanded comment about how nice it is to escape all of his troubles. But Giannina lashes right onto it and asks him, what are these troubles you're talking about? What are you trying to escape? She feels like she's been an open book to Damien, but he's been holding back and telling her things about his life back in the real world. She tries to pry some more information out of him, but he starts to get upset that she's just prying, and she starts to get upset that he's holding back. There's kind of a fight that they have with each other, but after the explosive Carlton Diamond fight we had last week, it comes across as a pretty tame fight.
True.
Later on, though, we see them rehashing this conversation back in, I guess it's their hotel room. So he starts the conversation and apologizes for being standoffish and admits that there actually is something that's bothering him from back home. It turns out that Damien went over his PTO limit to come to Mexico for the show, and he's worried about the consequences when he gets back, specifically that he might get fired. He worries that he won't be able to provide for a family, at which point Giannina is quote-unquote taken back in a good way, that he is taking such consideration for her and his life plans, and reassures him that everything will be okay, and it's their loss if they fire you, blah, 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 the things you say to people. All right, so that's the last time we see them. We see them one more time. They're gathered for some dinner and stargazing. And I have to admit, as somebody who's done a little stargazing myself, their technique for stargazing was really bothering me.
You mean on each other?
He had an electronic telescope that was made to... And then she was moving it manually, which takes everything out of calibration. Oh, okay. Giannina thinks it's very romantic to have a star named after her. And Damien says that I guess they'll just have to find one and do that. All right, so enough. There's enough stuff. So there's a little more substantial than we have before. But I still want to start here. You do know that when they do the name a star after thing, that's a scam. That's
not sure. Real. Like that star doesn't. Yeah, that might exist. It might have like 100 names.
Yes. That's just somebody who put a piece of thing on a piece of paper and said the star is named after you. It's not actually named after you.
Yeah, we can make that up ourselves. I can come up with a certificate. Why not?
Uh-huh.
I'll send it right to her.
Okay.
For the low price of $100.
Yeah, that's where I started. Their stargazing just messed me up so much. It's like every... Because you can't find... Okay. I don't think anybody cares but me.
Oh, goodness.
So I thought it was weird because I thought the whole time I was like, oh, it's just great to get away from everything. That's just standard... you know, blah, blah, things you say on vacation. I would never think to be like, oh, that's a good point. Let's dig deeper into that.
And she was
right. That was crazy to me.
I think that was an accident, you know, because I think she stumbled upon something that was legitimate because I don't know, like when it first started, I was like, what the hell is she getting upset about? Like literally nothing happened. She was literally getting mad because she said his answer was too vague. All right. So it was generic. There's like nothing wrong with that. You're like sitting out there relaxing. They weren't even having a deep conversation about anything. So I just immediately thought this was a bad sign. When someone starts picking at you and it's what day... 5 maybe total.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, that is not a good sign. Definitely not a good sign. And then the other thing that kind of I noticed, and I can also see that if he didn't know this about her, that it would be very easy to kind of take it personally and like kind of feed into these arguments, is just how mm-hmm. she talks. Like, even in her interview, like, just her tone, it sounds so like condescending. Mm-hmm. Which I know it's really bad of me to say, because I know I kind of have that tone sometimes and I'm like, no, that's just how I talk. But it's like very much like a condescending tone and like very punctuated, where it sounds aggressive, like she's mad right. or upset about something or annoyed at something, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's like, and that's how she's kind of talking to him. And it's just like, I can kind of see how if she says something that's like somewhat like even the slightest bit negative, in that tone, it definitely can be taken a certain way, and now you have an argument.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a weird little argument. Yeah. I was really confused by it, and part of it was fueled by, I guess it was fueled by him being defensive about something and not wanting to talk about what he was defensive about.
Right.
Because I feel like it would have blown it off early. It's been like, I just said forget about your worries because I'm on vacation, and
yeah,
it's just what you say on vacation. Like,
I feel Sorry. Like he needed to come up with something to get her to shut up, too.
Right.
Yeah,
My
because
boss is a pain in the ass.
Like, right. Because as soon as he opened up, she was fine. She was like, oh, mm-hmm. yeah. Like, and she was super comforting. And it's kind of one of those, we talk about this all the time. You know, it's like people, when they see the other person cry, they're like, oh, it's because they care. And it's like, not exactly right. like that, but it seemed really similar. As soon as he started crying about like his work situation, all of a mm-hmm. sudden she was just like, oh, he's being so honest and like right. vulnerable with me. It's like, is it's it? Definitely... I think he's crying about his job.
Yeah, it's something we had talked about like earlier, where she had to watch where he's stepping, because she does not want to be his therapist.
No.
And, like, it's one thing to want openness, and it's another thing, she likes it now, but eventually she's going to get to the point to be like, why don't you tell anybody else about any of your problems? Why am I the one who has to deal with all of your problems?
Right.
And talk you through all of your problems? Why is it always me? And it's kind of because in this situation, she's saying, I want it to always be me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was going to say, I felt like she was uncovering it in the first place. He didn't seem upset about his job before this conversation.
No, I'm just saying for her, it might be a be careful what you wish for situation.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely. I think there was an American Dad episode on that where they made up this elaborate lie just to get Francine to quit asking Stan questions. Okay, but moving on. We're talking about Love is Blind. So we have Amber and Barnett. So Amber and Barnett are sailing, and for some reason, they let Amber steer the boat for a while. They are lounging in the sun on the boat, and they are talking about their life when they get back to the real world. Amber is excited to meet Barnett's dog and to show him off to all of her friends and family. She says that her mom will be especially excited because she's been trying to get Amber married off forever now. They discuss the events of the previous night when they met with all the couples. Amber thinks that they are the happiest couple. She then asks Barnett if he was having second thoughts after meeting Jessica. And Barnett just kind of laughs, but doesn't really say anything. Amber says in an interview that it wouldn't have worked with anyone else because it was fate for them to be together. So my question for you is, why do you think Amber would even ask that? Because do you think that in any world Barnett would ever say that he had second thoughts about her after meeting Jessica?
No, but I don't know if she was trying to get like a hesitation or like a flash of truth that flew on his face before he came up with the answer that he gave.
Because he didn't really give an answer. He just kind of laughed and didn't say anything. I mean, they might have cut it out. You don't know how it's edited, but
yeah,
he didn't say anything.
I don't know. I mean, that seems like it's also kind of a way of her trying to send the message that she's not a threat. I'm not hiding from this. I'm not pretending like there wasn't a past there. Whatever. I don't even care. How was that?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I kind of took it as that, I don't know, fishing for compliments. Like, it's definitely lends itself sure. to like, oh, no, I love you. I would never have second thoughts because you are the perfect person for me. So kind of like, yeah, like I said, fishing for compliments. Because, I mean, why else would you ask that question? It was just like, all right. He's not going to be truthful. Yes, I'm having second thoughts.
Yeah, it's only you, baby.
I should have picked Jessica. Jessica just, to, you know, she's more my type.
Mm-hmm. There's somebody else who has second thoughts we're going to get to in a minute.
Oh, yeah. Well, why don't we get to them now? I don't think we have much more.
Okay. Well, the only thing that bothered me is them driving the sailboat. Right?
Yeah.
And acting like they were helming the sailboat.
Yeah, there's totally a crew.
A crew.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, that drove me a little nuts.
Because when they panned out later, you saw some dude in a brown shirt, like, steering the boat.
I looked at it. That's a sailboat, right? It's a decently sized sailboat.
Yeah.
There's at least a crew of 4 or 5 on that thing.
Oh, right. You have to have, like, a certificate or a license, I think, if you want a sailboat, like, longer than a certain length or something. And I definitely feel like that would be one of them.
Yes, because it was a catamaran.
Yeah. But,
like, I just would be so uncomfortable with a whole crew of a boat that took the boat out just for me. I just feel awkward. Just, I'm sitting there in the boat, and they're all working. Like,
I kind of feel like, so with 90 Day Fiancé this last week, we had Avery and Ash. And it kind of felt like they were the only ones because they filmed them in such a way where they really avoided everybody else who's on that boat. But when they all jumped in to go snorkeling, it was very clear there was like probably 20 people on this like tour with them.
True. You know? But they had they panned out. You could see the whole boat. They were sitting in the front of it.
Everybody could have been under deck though, you know, below deck.
I could not sit on the front of there and watch everybody else like rig those sails. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I can't. Like, everybody else is working. I have to work. What do I tell you? Tell me where to pull. Okay.
Now we can move on. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So, man.
So much.
I feel like I'm going to be summarizing like 3/4 of the episode with this one.
Yeah, pretty much.
But if people want to skip ahead, the TLDR version is that Jessica is still into Barnett and doesn't really want to marry Mark. All right. But I'll do the play-by-play anyway. So we start with these two coming back into the room after the surprise gathering from last episode. Jessica tells us that she was glad to see Barnett, but it did hurt a little bit, and that Barnett is clearly lost and confused about what he wants, as evidenced by him picking Amber over her. Mark asks her what she was feeling about seeing Barnett and Amber together, and Jessica admits that she did have a connection with Barnett, but it just wasn't the same as her connection with Mark. Mark tells us in an interview that he was okay with seeing all the other couples there, including Barnett and Amber, because at the end of the day, everybody ended up with the people that they were supposed to be with. I kind of got that the implication was that Mark doesn't know that Barnett was the one who rejected Jessica, and he thinks it's the other way around. So at this point, Mark and Jessica get into another conversation about how they're not going to have sex. Jessica says she's still not comfortable, and they had a great connection in the pods that she doesn't want to blow by, well, blowing too early. She wants their connection to be real, and that's like some random hookup. Because everybody can hook up with someone whenever they want to, which, let's be honest, is probably more true for Jessica than it is for most people. Mark tells her that he gets it and would never pressure her for anything, but wishes the conversation felt more like a collaboration and less like a command. This was obviously not the right thing to say because Jessica just starts crying until the end of the scene. So next up, we see their big adventure. They got horseback riding and a random picnic in the woods. As they're saddling up, Jessica ominously says that she doesn't know if dating someone so much like herself can work. And then, to add the subliminal messaging we talked about earlier, we get a close-up of a wasp.
Okay.
A vicious, death-killing insect. Okay.
Reminds me of Animal Crossing.
Yeah, Animal Crossing, too. The one, you shake the tree and a damn wasp fall out of it and they sting you. Yeah. My eyes jacked up for the rest of the day. Anyway.
Yep, mine too.
Their day of riding looks like it might be the high watermark for their relationship. They are both pretty at ease, laughing and making jokes about pungent cheese. Jessica even thinks she might be starting to come around on Mark. It's pretty short-lived, though, because later that evening they go for drinks in the bar where Amber, Barnett, Kenny, Kelly are all there. Immediately when they come in, Amber starts staking her territory by hanging all over Barnett. So Jessica takes Kelly aside for some girl talk. All right, Jessica tells Kelly she just isn't where everybody else seems to be emotionally, and seeing everyone else all hard-eye emoji over their matches makes her wonder if she'll ever get there. Jessica says Barnett's looks are more her type, and Kelly wonders what it is about Mark's looks that don't work, his height, dark hair. Jessica leaves the conversation telling us and Kelly that she needs to be more open with Mark and tell him how she feels, which she does but off camera. Mark is all broken up about it and even sheds a dramatic single tear for the camera. Jessica tells us in an interview that kissing Mark just doesn't feel right, and she's not sure that it ever will. She no longer wants to wear the ring, but is willing to keep pushing forward with the rest of the experiment to see if something further develops, but she doesn't expect it to. Mark, being young and in love, is willing to go along on the grounds of, so you're telling me there's a chance. So then there's a pool party, which we'll get into later with all the other couples. But for this couple, Jessica makes some weirdly possessive comments about Barnett, saying that had he picked her, he'd be much more introspective, mature, and sophisticated. Barnett doesn't give Jessica much to go on, as he pretty much tells her point blank that it was hard, and he's sorry she's hurt, but he's very happy with the choices he made in the pods. Eventually, at the end of this party, Mark decides to lay it all out there. Honestly, though, I'm not sure what he means about that, because he's pretty much had his emotions right out there this entire time.
Yeah, right.
Jessica seems to be trying to explain it, what she's feeling, without hurting his feelings, but that simply isn't possible. She says the experiment has turned for her, and she's no longer going to wear the ring, because that feels like a lie, and that she just doesn't find the connection that they had back in the pods. And then they basically just settle on describing their situation as being on each other's team, whatever that means. So I'm going to start my question for you. What does that mean?
I kind of took it to mean that they're on their side, but more in like a, hey, like I want what's best for you. Even if that's not me, we're on the same team. We have the goal of making everybody on our team happy, but it might not be with one another.
Okay.
So that's how I kind of took it to me.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Let's talk about Messica.
Is that the social media thing? Is that what we got?
No, Lauren calls her that, I think in future episodes. So she is known as Messica because she gets a little sloppy when she's drunk and not like, I don't know, she's not like white girl wasted, you know what I'm saying? Like,
she's not Catch Me Outside.
Yeah, but at the same time, she's definitely like slurring her words, being a little nonsensical with what she's saying, saying things that she probably wouldn't be saying otherwise.
Okay.
But I thought she was really super judgmental of Amber and Barnett. You know, like had intimate knowledge of Barnett, so she would have intimate knowledge of their relationship.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny because she keeps insisting that she had this intimate, deep, meaningful relationship with Barnett. And Barnett's just like, oh, yeah, we just shot the shit.
Yeah.
That was a less serious relationship.
That was really superficial. You know, but she seems to think it's this like life altering relationship that she can never replicate again.
Yeah. Which is, how much does Mark hear of that? I mean, what would it take? What would it take for Mark to figure out, like, dude, this girl is not into you?
No, but even still, there are moments where I'm like, are you really into her? Because, like, when she got really drunk and they're having that conversation, like, she's starting to get, like, sloppy, messy drunk. And it's like, that can't be attractive. You know, Mark did not seem really wasted. I mean, I'm sure he was drinking, too, but it's like... Uh-huh. When you kind of have one person more drunk than the other, you can't like, oh, yeah, like, I find this attractive. This is hot.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, it's definitely like, there are definitely people that you love enough when they're sober that you'll put up with that when they're drunk. But you're never like, oh, this is what I got into this relationship for. Holding your hair back in the bathroom.
Oh, God.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and I was going to say that then, you know, we actually opened up with them drinking, you know, and then the next day, you know, she's sober. And it's just like, she is just so much more well-spoken when she's sober. She's able to, like, articulate her thoughts and feelings, like, whereas the night before, it just seemed kind of like a jumbled mess. I was, like, having a hard time following what she was saying. And her logic was definitely drunk logic. It, like, bounced around from here to here to here, where it was difficult for Mark to kind of put all the pieces together to kind of find a linear, logical argument through all that.
Right. And it was definitely a drunk thing where he just said the wrong word. Like, he said the word control, and she was like, what the fuck? What?
Yeah, and all of a sudden
she just lost it. Like, because I get what he was trying to say. He was like, it doesn't sound like you're talking to me. It sounds like you're ordering me to this thing. So her drunk, I just don't know who she's trying to fool? Is she trying
everyone?
Keeping in mind that the one of the people she might be trying to fool is herself.
Yeah.
Just trying to convince herself, you know, against something that's obviously true.
Right. I kind of feel like everyone, just because, you know, she knows she's on this television show. Mm-hmm. It's maybe harder for her to kind of keep those feelings and emotions at bay when she's drunk. And so I feel like she just has to kind of run around doing like damage control this entire time, mm-hmm. you know, when she's like actually conscious enough to do that. So one thing that she says that I was like, really? She says like, oh, Mark and I, we're like the exact same person. And I'm like, I don't see it.
I don't think you are.
See it at all. Like, they might be the same person in terms of background, values, things on paper. But mm-hmm. that's where it ends for me, because it's like, I feel like they have very different energy. I feel like how they deal with conflict is very different. Like just their personalities are different. Like they are mm-hmm. not the same person at all.
No, I couldn't figure out where she was getting that either.
Yeah. I mean, she even said that what they connected on was that they had so many things in common. Like they mm-hmm. both grew up in Chicago. They both like sports. They both like Chicago sports. You know, they both like Italian beef, apparently.
Okay. But that's what we were talking about. We talked about this in our most recent podcast about uh-huh. how guys are so superficial about what they yeah. think about each other. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we get along great. We're both, I don't know, Colts fans.
Yeah.
Like that. Doesn't matter.
and we both like the same kind of beer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. We're best friends for life.
We're best friends. That's it. We're exactly the same person. It's like, I don't think that's how it works.
Like, and we don't like to talk during games.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Nobody likes that. Shut up. Why can't watch games at bars?
Yeah.
Oh, man. If there were just games around anymore, that'd be awesome.
You could watch the classics.
Oh, yeah, I know how those end.
Yeah.
My team sucks, so they never end up on any of the classic things.
Because I was going to say, I heard that some people actually prefer the classic stuff because it's less anxiety-inducing if they know what the mm-hmm. outcome is. Then they can just enjoy the play.
Is it, though? Is it, though? Because, I mean...
You like the excitement part?
No, I'm saying, for instance, the Bulls thing is on, right? Uh-huh. You know what would suck to be right now? A Jazz fan. All I get to see is my team losing all the time to Michael Jordan. Yay!
Yeah, I guess so.
Anyway.
Okay. Something that I noticed about them is that she does not reciprocate or initiate any kind of physical contact. So every time, like, they're close, mm-hmm. she doesn't push him away, but he's, like, constantly kissing her cheek. You know, like they're like never kissing lip to lip. She keeps on like, oh, cutesy, like, oh, kiss my cheek, like, you know, and she'll like lean in. But I mean, she doesn't reciprocate.
That's true. That's true. Because it's funny. You're right. Because she says that kissing him feels unnatural or uncomfortable or something. But they don't really like kiss.
No.
Like he kisses her cheek. Like, have I really like actually kissed? Have they made out?
Maybe not. I don't know. I'm not going to lie, though. Like, I think I have what Jessica's type is down. And I'm not going to say it's all that different from my type, I suppose. I'm not attracted to Mark at all. I could see if you're... And for me personally, Barnett is not the golden standard by any means. But if you're someone who is going for a Barnett type, okay, so that kind of, like, pretty boy, fraternity boy type, you know, and then you get a Mark, you're going to be super disappointed.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what's making her not happy in all of this is that she's constantly comparing. Like, I feel like they would have done so much better if they had never met up with Barnett after. If Jessica had never known what Barnett looked like and she didn't have kind of these regrets.
Sure.
She would have just focused on Mark.
The other thing with Barnett is she says repeatedly, he's the physical, his physical attributes, forget everything else, are what she generally goes for.
Yes. And I feel like she's making up the personality part to go along with it. Because even when she was saying like, oh, if he was me, he would be philosophical and introspective and like well-spoken. And like, it's like, those things are not Barnett and they never will be Barnett. It doesn't matter who he's with.
Right. But so she doesn't have a person. Like, she thinks she's making up, you know what I'm saying? She's not picturing a person in her. She's picturing up
a clay
figure that she's imbibing, that that every woman imbibes with her, with their being. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's like that because he's with Amber. If he was with me, I would give him more things. So she's...
Nah, doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't work like that at all. And why would he want to be with somebody that thinks he's not his own person?
Right, yeah. That doesn't know his true self. I mean, if anything, like, Barnett and Amber both come off as a little trashy to me. So it's kind of like, at least they're trashy together, you know? And it's like, you'll never have Amber... like thinking Barnett is something that he isn't and vice versa. They both know what trash they are. Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't consider it trash because, I mean, they relate to it so much. But, you know, they're not going to make the other person out to be someone that they're not.
Right. I can see that. I mean, I get what it is. It's funny that you're right. They're very different people. But they were very different people in the pods. And I don't get what she's saying in the pods, how she was so into Mark, or she was so connecting with Mark in that she wasn't, because it seems like the thing that you get from Mark that you don't get from Barnett is a real earnestness, right? He's all in with everything he says, and he doesn't take anything lightly, and he's not gonna crack little jokes or try to defuse the situation. He's got this intensity to him, right? This earnest intensity that I agree can be really off-putting. He's like, why is everything just back up? But he had that in the pod.
Yeah.
And so I don't understand why, like, that's kind of uncomfortable. I mean, obviously there's the fact that she's clearly not attracted to him.
Yes, very clearly. Okay, then, moving on. So the couples all met for two outings that they were all filmed together. So the first one is where they meet up at a bar in the evening. Kelly notices that Amber got a little more touchy-feely with Barnett as soon as Jessica walked into the room. They are sharing what activity they all did, and Jessica says that they drove horses. Barnett uses that as a segue into a dirty joke about barebacking it last night, and Amber laughs so hysterically while snorting and doubling over on the ground. Very over the top. Barnett says he's smuggling pennies as Kelly and Kenny start making out. This makes Jessica feel a little uncomfortable, so she takes Kelly aside just to vent. They are both bonding over their lack of physical intimacy with their partners. So then Jessica is telling Kelly that everyone thinks Kenny and Kelly have the best chances of making it. Jessica is still comparing their relationship with everyone else, and she feels like she is behind. She says there is still a physical discomfort. So the next day, they're all hanging out at the pool. Jessica thinks it's weird because she had some serious conversations with these guys, and now she has to see them, and she feels so vulnerable. Jessica gets one-on-one time with Barnett, and she makes a joke about how there is a lot of sexual chemistry with him and Amber. Barnett laughs and then sticks out his tongue. Gross. So then Jessica admits that she really is attracted to Barnett. Barnett admits to Jessica that they had a connection. It was just different, and he's happy now. So then we kind of talked about all that Jessica Barnett, like, pretending that he's someone that she's not. And then that was pretty much it. Mark does confide in Amber that he feels that everything with Jess is so one-sided. So some of that was a little bit of a rehash since we had some.
Sure. A lot of the whole group stuff was like integral to Mark and Jessica's storyline.
Definitely.
So I had to cover it.
Yeah. Or Barnett and Amber. But the two of them, it's just like, oh my gosh, keep it in your pants for like an hour while you're in an outing with these people.
It is. And I don't know. I said it last time. I just feel like the people who talk about doing it the most, I'm never convinced they're actually doing it the most. Like, I feel like there's always going to be
something. Okay. And even Kelly noticed, she said like, oh, she got a little bit more possessive and a little bit more touchy feely as soon as Jessica came in.
She did. He made a lame joke and that she just like
so
went
lame.
Ape over. So lame. It wasn't, I would have, like, groan worthy joke.
No.
Like, I would have been like, oh, dude. Well,
does that surprise you at all coming from Barnett? He's like infantile, you know?
And I'm okay with people. I don't want to say that. I'm not prudish. I'm okay with dirty jokes. But if you're going to make a dirty joke, make it a clever dirty joke.
Sure. I agree.
You can't just be like,
yeah, dicks.
That's right. Ha ha. Yeah. That's what she said.
Oh, gosh. You know he says that on the daily, like,
oh,
at least 100 times. Okay, so I think that's all we had from everyone.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay,
yeah.
What about your student of the week?
All right, I went with Kelly, I guess. Mm-hmm. I was hard to find one because it was so focused on Mark and Jessica. Yeah. And it's not Mark and it's not Jessica.
Right.
That it's really hard to find because everybody else, we didn't really get much out of them.
Right.
Right? So it was kind of like a lot of nothing. So I went with Kelly because she did give advice.
Yes. That's funny because I also gave it to Kelly and kind of the same like reasoning because it was like she actually like I felt like comforted Jessica, made her feel like she wasn't alone in where she was. I think that's why Jessica also confided in her. But I actually heard that they were in the same social circles before the show. So not they might not have been like good friends, but they had met each other, known each other from before.
Yeah, but you know how it is. Whenever you go somewhere and it's like there's one person that you had met before, you're like,
yep, you. You're my person.
Yep. Yeah.
But I think it also helped that Kelly at least could somewhat relate to what she was going through in terms of, you know, because they're the only two couples who haven't had sex, essentially.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Okay. What about your dunce?
I mean, I didn't want to because this whole entire episode was just designed to get me to say Jessica. Mm-hmm. But I can't think of anybody else to give it to besides Jessica. Like they production clearly engineered this episode to make Jessica the bad guy. But I don't know how I can make anybody else the bad guy.
Yeah. I know someone, Giannina.
Okay.
I just felt like, come on, like you're picking at this guy. Like you barely know him. Like, yes, you know him, but it's like different. Like there are going to be things that you're going to be learning about this person for a long time, as much as you've talked about like deep things, like quit harping him on him for something that like was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
you
true.
Made it into something and ends up that there was some substance there, but that was a pure accident. At least I think it was a pure accident.
It was okay. It kind of connects with something I had said on our 90 Day Fiancé podcast is like, I know she wants to learn about this guy, but there are ways to learn about people without directly asking them everything.
Yeah.
Like they don't have to tell you out of their mouth everything that you're going to know about them. If the only way you can learn about somebody is by what they say to you, you're never going to know them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what about your life lesson?
All right. So my life lesson is going to Jessica. We kind of touched on it a little bit is you are not going to fundamentally change a person that you're with.
True.
And you're definitely not going to do that in 3 days with you. He is not going to change from a bro-y, you know, dick joke douchebag to a philosophical, deep thinking, introspective professor because he was with you for 5 days.
Right.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Definitely. Okay, so my life lesson kind of has to do with Amber and Jessica, and maybe in a little way Kelly, just Kelly being the good example of this, is I just think it's women have this reputation for being catty and competitive, and it just seems like there's enough men in the world to go around. You know, why don't we just accept when, you know, you've lost? It doesn't need to be like that you lost, right? And then be supportive of one another. Like, it shouldn't have to be like this. You know, like, it should never be the case where two women are fighting over a man. Like, that that shouldn't be a thing.
Part of that's connected to what I did because you're going to fight over them if you don't think the man has agency himself and can make it. You think he's in a relationship because you tricked him into because that other woman tricked him into a relationship.
Yeah. That's actually very true because then it's like, oh, well, this other person had control over the situation and she bested me at who's controlling the situation better.
Right. Instead of him being a person that made a decision.
Right. And, well, I guess I can see how some women think that men just kind of go along with whoever.
Whoever was the most there is who won. Yes.
I could see. I sometimes wonder a little bit. There was a book I had read a long time ago, and their theory in this book it was kind of like a self-help book or something. I can't remember. It was so long ago. But their theory mm-hmm. was that, and I think they also kind of echoed the sentiment on Sex and the City. I do recall this being an episode. It's kind of like men, it's not about the woman. It's just about a time in their life where like, yeah, I'm ready to be committed now. And it's kind of like whoever happens to be in your vicinity when this happens, it's like, yep, you're the one. Has nothing to do with you. Guys are kind of like, yeah, whoever. And so they kind of compared, I think, on Sex and the City to like taxis. It's like they'll just, sure. you know, with the taxi mm-hmm. light comes on, that means you're ready to get married. Whoever happens to be there, whether you're in the cab or not. So I think yeah. women see it that way, where it's just kind of like,
you can, but chance. This is like, and even if you do go, this was like the one situation where that isn't true. Like sure. they made him.
I don't know. I kind of feel like some guys, like not all, definitely not. But I do think there's some guys who are just like, yeah, I guess it's ready to settle down.
Sure.
Whoever comes yeah. by that is the least objectionable that comes by, you know, like mm-hmm. I could probably like accept living with this person for the rest of my life.
Sure.
Your... Yeah, which goes back to my theory that love is successful relationships are because love was a choice and continues sure. to be a choice, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
All right. Sounds good. So we'll be back for more next week. We'll cover episode six.
Yeah, I guess we're on six. How many are in this again? Eight and then a tell-all or nine
11.
And a tell-all? 11. Oh, my gosh.
I think it's 10 and a tell-all.
Oh, yeah. goodness. All right.
I know.
Yeah, I feel like this is going to take us so long to get through, though. But then I think by the time we finish Love After Lockup, we'll be back.
There you go.
Yeah.
Be perfect.
All right. All right. Sounds good. Okay, so I'll see
okay.
you soon.
Yep.
Okay,
all right.
Bye.
Okay, bye.